Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
That's right. Let's go around the NFL here in the loop. Sports Radio 610. You got John Lopez. You got Figgy Fig. You have myself, Reginald Adetula, hanging out with you. And apparently we just got some news come down.
Yeah, we did.
Figgy Fig, would you like to break it yourself?
Yeah. Joe Mixon, that guy that was running all over the place, he is the AFC Offensive Player of the Week.
He better be. Like, if he wasn't. Especially on a day where it felt like, or not just a day, but a week, where it felt like their offense was kind of down in general.
Yeah.
The man who puts up 159 yards on the ground and what, damn near 180 all purpose?
All together, yeah.
Yeah. That's Offensive Player of the Week.
I could have seen them giving it to the guy from San Francisco because it was like,
well, this AFC,
story.
Though. This was,
that's true.
This
that's
one
true,
was AFC. Yeah. Who else was a candidate, I wonder?
I don't know that they throw it out like that. I think they just let us know who won it. And then
yeah, no, I'm just curious. Like, among us, who might have been in the mix, no pun intended, for that. I guess maybe Tyreek?
Yeah, Tyreek did put up a pretty big day when it came to receiving. I got to go back and actually look at the scores now. And see who did put up all them yards. That's a NFL, or an NFC rather, player, Jayden Reed.
Yeah.
He had a big game, but that's on the NFC side.
Baker, also NFC.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a lot.
Hey, they made the right pick. Right?
Oh, no, they absolutely made the right pick, but it's like I was saying earlier. The scary thing about the Texans is they figure two, and they probably will get better everywhere except running. Kind of hard to get better than that.
And if they do, good God almighty, right? Like, some people got to start talking to Nick Casario about getting more money if that's the case.
How about Clint yesterday? Just since we're on Mixon, the best running back the Texans have ever had.
I think he said the most talented.
Most
talented running back.
But, appreciate that clarification. I'm sure Clint does as well.
He would came in here like, nope.
Hey, Lopez. But still.
Because, I mean, candidates that were throwing
Arian Foster was pretty talented. Pretty talented. But no, I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm not saying I even disagree.
No, it is something to think about.
I'm just saying it's an eye opener.
I think the key word is talented too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because how do you define talent?
That's the beauty of sports talk radio, and I'm not trying to like disparage Clint at all because I appreciate what he was doing there. Is that sometimes you just gotta put one of those things out there that you're like, you can't check me on this.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's not really a tangible number that we could put on this, quantifiable data that we can use for this.
Yeah.
All kind of speculative. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with that being the case, you got to let me rock.
It's an opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Clint, he would get down in the sticks and be like, oh, no, the way Mixon moved his hips and the way he cut his feet and all that stuff, he'd get in the nitty gritty.
And look, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong about that.
Like, it really was beautiful watching Joe Mixon tote the rock. Like, it was a thing of beauty. I was enjoying the technical aspects of it, the ways in which, like, he, you know, batted an arm away on a tackler and just kind of slid his body past
the cutbacks.
A defender, right? The cutbacks, these types of things, just putting your foot in the ground. It really was gorgeous. So
this was the perfect move, man, because I know we were all in on Saquon Barkley, and I think that still would have been a good move, but I think this is the perfect fit, man. Joe Mixon was the perfect fit.
And a better number, right? Like, this is a better, I guess, efficiency move in that way. And so, congratulations to Joe Mixon, and the 281's right. Also, congratulations to the offensive line, who did a lot of work to make sure that it looked real good
No doubt.
You mentioned this. You put this on the rundown here, Lopez, because we were talking about, as some people call him, the nasty man, Deshaun Watson in Cleveland.
Some people do call him that, huh?
The nasty.
Yeah, we just got more insight into a case that popped up with a Jane Doe who accused him of sexual assault, forcible sexual assault, and that's happening here in Houston as well, from October of 2020. And it looks like Pro Football Talk, right? Mike Florio got their hands on Deshaun Watson's contract. Good job there. I do wonder when these things happen, right? People in media, I understand what the onus and the impetus would be for, like, hey, let's see if we can get our hands on the contract. Who gave him the contract?
Okay, so you're going to learn this about me if you don't know it already. I people say I'm a big conspiracy theorist. I don't know if I necessarily like.
Oh, get the X-Files theme ready.
I don't know if I like the terminology there, but I do believe that things like this that are made public or big plans that sort of are in steps, you know, in steps, like, you know, step one is this, release this to the media. Step two is that, et cetera.
You said plans or plants?
Yeah, I think that's what he said.
Yeah. Both. I guess technically I am, you know, more of a conspiracy theorist than anything. I'll put it simply. I don't think a lot of things happen by accident in the public eye, you know, in terms of what is written and released and newsworthy. This was not an accident. I'm telling you right now. It said Sports Illustrated has, quote, obtained Deshaun Watson's contract. And in that contract, there is wording that they made very clear. It includes a potentially relevant clause where Watson can be considered in default if he is reasonably believed by the club to have engaged in personal conduct that materially and adversely affects or reflects on the club. Guys, this wasn't obtained. I mean, I guess technically it was, but it was given.
My thing is, this should have been out the day he signed that contract.
I do recall talk when he signed the contract that he would have to, like, you know, make clear the situations that had happened prior.
But we didn't see the contract.
But see, right.
But it was speculation,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, because people mentioned that part. Yeah. You know, if he stay on the right track and he got to go to therapy and all this other stuff, they mentioned that. But yeah. His contract wasn't leaked and nothing like that. The details.
Not at all.
But I think.
But it was after Sunday's performance.
Sure.
Yeah. Hey, they trying to wiggle out of that one, man.
Well, my thing about it is, if you wanted to get it out with the performance, we probably could have done this a lot earlier, right? But I do think there is something to be said for the idea that anytime that the media comes with some information, they have sources that have helped them get that, right? Like, and so when with any news, there is an understanding that, hey, somebody deemed it worthwhile to provide this information. And so who. Consider the source, right, is always something I say, and I'm sure that you often think of.
Well, and you know, you have a journalistic background. Obviously, I do. We've all been taught from the time we entered this profession, you know, the one thing you have to know about sourcing is the sources have an agenda, too.
Correct.
And so you have to kind of muddle through and filter through, you know, what is their intent, what is their agenda, and try to find the real story. There is no question in my mind. There is an agenda and an intent with releasing this to Sports Illustrated. It wasn't like some you know, whatever Cleveland newspaper. Not all due respect, but I'm saying, like, doing a lot of digging and going through you know, the system to get all these things released. No. It was obtained. There's a reason it was obtained.
But I mean, it is somewhat understandable in my vantage point at this point, right? Like. You want to make sure that, and the idea is, hey man, if you're the Cleveland Browns and you're setting up for that particular move with everything that's happening, you want to make sure that, you know, the PR battle is also won, so that you don't have to answer the questions afterwards. That once that news comes, or once you make that move, people are like, yeah, okay, I can put two and two together.
Exactly.
And it adds up to four.
Exactly.
Moving on around the NFL. Bill Belichick, who seems like he might be all right when it comes to this media thing, right?
I think so.
He did Monday Night Football with the Manning cast, and he was joining the Pat McAfee show a couple days ago. And I don't know, it seems like he might not be in on this quarterback in the AFC South.
You know, that's the one that always got me when the player said, well, I was trying to make a play. I was like, well, how about trying to make a good one then?
Like a bad play.
So the play that Levis had where he gets out of the pocket, he flips the ball, you know, underhand, backhand, whatever it was. And that's just, you know, even if you hit it, what do you really have? Not much. And then if you don't hit it, then, you know, you lose the game. So it's just, there's no upside to that play. There's only downside. And, you know, it's just, you know, that's just a terrible decision. And Tom and I've talked a million times about, you know, if you complete this pass, what's the upside? You gain 1 yard, you gain 2 yards. All right, you guys going to get tackled anyway. Like the play we just saw in Tennessee. I mean, what if he had completed that? What's the upside? 2 yards? What's the downside? Lose the game. You know, like that's you just can't make those kind of decisions. And even if that ball had been complete, there's no upside to it. And so, you know, Tom did a great job of, you know, risk management and, you know, cut his losses. And so, you know, rather than turn the ball over, All right, you lose a couple of yards and you get sacked, but at least we can gain our field position back by punting on third down.
You know, to be fair, it's not like he's like, this guy stinks.
No, he's not wrong.
No, he's just saying in that particular moment, let's be fair about it. What's, you know, well, you heard him, you know, well, what's the upside, et cetera.
He sounds like the old school head coach that's like, when you throw the football, there are two things that can happen, or three things that can happen, and two of them are bad, right? Yeah, like, that's some of that. But I think he's absolutely right in that.
No, he's absolutely right, and he's really just talking about that particular play. But, boy, you could just sense it the way he was talking. Like, he is not a fan.
No, he has a disdain for all them dudes that are like, I'm going to go make a play. He's like, no, fit into the system. Do the right thing. Yeah. Make the right choice.
It just wasn't a smart play.
Yeah.
No, I mean, absolutely not.
You don't want to be a head coach on the sideline looking at a quarterback making a decision like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, those are the points of maturity when it comes to quarterbacks, right? Like, you want the guy that's capable of making a play, but the quarterback that is also, like, so hell-bent on making a play that they get away from the things that are routine and the things that make sense. It was one of the things that really annoyed me with Josh Allen early in his career. Is like, he's a dude out here running around, taking hits, and then, like, throwing it up to a fullback downfield. It's like, dude, that's not a reason. That's not a smart way of playing. Like, I understand that you can do that. But is it smart to do that? And I think
he's not young. I mean, he's young, but he's not a rookie. And so I think what it says is it also kind of is a commentary on what separates with quarterbacks that, you know, have some upside and can be pretty good occasionally to a C.J. Stroud or someone like that. So that I think that's what he's talking about. Like, the decision making, it's just not going to be there.
So we got some more news on some players around the NFL. Justin Fields, according to Mike Tomlin, will start again week two. And that is not with any level of caveat or contingency on Russell Wilson. That Justin Fields thing, I guess he did enough to hold on to that job in Mike Tomlin's perspective.
Are we going to see Russell Wilson start a game again?
Sure. Because that feels like a situation where you have a couple of guys and neither one of them is like particularly incredible. I feel like you'll get a game that's bad enough with Fields where you bounce back and forth.
It stands to reason that you will, but I also feel, I think he realizes, it wasn't a flukish performance that he had in Denver. In Denver. I think he just feels like there's, back to that, the upside with Justin Fields. I think they're going to ride with him.
It's possible. Yeah. It is quite possible. And then tomorrow we have Thursday Night Football. You actually mentioned this in the pregame.
I was like, that's tomorrow?
You were like, damn, we're already there. So, yeah, go ahead and start setting your lineups, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Right, we'll remind you again tomorrow in the loop. But Raheem Mostert will not be playing for the Miami Dolphins. You think that makes a big change in how they are able to go out and compete against the Bills?
No, I think absolutely it does. That's their MO, man, to be able to have those running backs going through there. And I think the other thing that it changes is Devin Achane is not 100%. He is participating in practice today, but not in pads. So, you know, Dolphins, you know, they start chipping away at those running backs, it changes the whole game.
Well, they got like four of them.
Yeah, but they're down to two. They
drafted the running back this draft. Like
right?
They love just like collecting running backs.
Yeah, that's how it should be, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially when you can get them for the low. So shout out to the Dolphins. Excited still for that game. That's going to be a fascinating one. Then continuing in our talk about like what's the pecking order in the AFC, I think that will give us more information in that one. Before we go here, a legend in the game when it comes to especially being like a Texas running back, Adrian Peterson. Just a wild specimen of a player. Like, I still remember the idea of like returning from an ACL incredibly quickly. Just a wild dude, right? He made over $100 million during his 15-year NFL career. I forgot that he was just hanging on, bouncing around.
Oh, yeah.
The there too. That's 15 years is insane for a running back. But apparently he now faces a debt in excess of $12 million. And he's been ordered to turn over some assets to be able to pay it. So apparently a court-appointed receiver has accused Peterson of playing what is called, quote, a shell game in order to avoid payment because he owes some money. He had a $5.2 million loan from 2016. It became an $8.3 million judgment in 2021. And then attorney's fees and, I guess, also a level of, I guess, what's the right word that I'm interest?
Oh, yeah.
Brings you to just over $12 million.
And you know, the funny thing, when I saw this, first of all, and I was telling you guys this before, so it's just sad. But a lot of people say, how does that happen? He made over $100 million and he's $12.5 million in debt. I'm beyond that. It happens. Because so many of these athletes get manipulated and used, and like maybe 15, 20 years ago, I was like, I would be, hey, how does that happen? It's not a surprise. No. It's just sad.
There's also like kind of a quality of life aspect of things where you, and it sounds wild, like you kind of have to spend money at a particular
in some
level.
Areas, yeah.
And then the taxes and all those types of things. There's a lot of money drain in there, not to necessarily be super defensive.
You don't
want to
be rich
here.
Yeah. And sometimes you just have the wrong people in your corner.
That's what it is.
And a lot of people take money, and so much money coming in, you can't tell who took what until it's too late.
And as much as the NFL has all these resources that you can use, you know, for money, you know, management and all these other things.
If a money manager is vetted, all it takes is one time where they decide to defraud somebody. And
exactly.
There you go.
It's just sad. But from $100 million in earnings to $12.5 million in debt.
So, yeah, about $12.5 million. Best of luck to him in trying to get that together because that's the thing that scares me the most. Making him a lot of money, cool. Owing someone a whole bunch of money, terrifying to me.
Yeah.
Going to be completely honest, terrifying. There you go. Let's around the NFL here in the loop. Keep it locked here, though, because I think when we get into what's popping, there's some Texans news that's happening as well when it comes to the roster churn that I think is going to be deeply interesting. So hang around with what's happening. But coming up next, we talked about how Joe Mixon 159 yards in week one, 30 carries. That just isn't sustainable. But what is the optimal distribution for the run and maybe even for the pass? We'll talk about that next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
You're in the loop. Sports Radio 610, John Lopez, Figgy Figgy, myself, Reginald Atitula, hanging out with you. A little bit of a somber day, but we find a way to have some fun. We'll talk about that, I guess, all throughout the day. But unfortunately, we learned earlier this morning that Frankie Beverly of Frankie Beverly and Maze, Maze and Frankie Beverly, or just Maze, as John Lopez refers to it.
Yeah, that's how I remember it, man.
Passed away earlier today at 77. So as Figgy is wont to do, we're going to vibe out to the music. Appreciate the art of the artist on this In the Loop Wednesday. Let's talk about this, man. Obviously, before we talk about this, I keep saying I was going to do this because I got to let the people know.
Just do it.
Keep locking in. 12 o'clock hour, because today's a Wednesday, every Wednesday of the season, but specifically today, this Wednesday in the noon o'clock hour, we'll be doing a Texas Star Grill Shops giveaway. So you'll get a $50 gift card to Texas Star Grill Shops and be entered for an opportunity to win a new grill at the end of the season as well.
How about that? Those are my guys over there. And nice.
You gonna throw some OG sauce in there too?
I did last year.
Okay,
let's do it. I'll bring a case of OG sauce too.
Oh, you just nice. Got me. Oh,
yeah. Okay.
So yeah, you want to keep it locked to In the Loop. We'll
bring them a brisket too, man, to cook on that.
Yeah, you can do that.
Let's not get crazy now. No, I'll throw in a case of OG sauce. And last year, just for those who want to listen, who are listening, you want to stay in the noon hour. I helped deliver, not physically lifting, but I was there.
You just showed up.
I just showed up.
He supervised.
Showed up for the gram.
Took some pictures, kissed some babies.
For the gram.
Talked a little barbecue with last year's winners. It's a badass grill.
Nice.
Like,
okay.
A bad boy.
But that's for the season. Let's start with giving you the $50 gift card.
Yeah.
Hang around, listen to In the Loop, as you probably would do anyways, and make sure you call in when we solicit for it.
Mm-hmm.
But that is in the next hour of this program. Right now, though, we revisit the fact that Joe Mixon carried the ball 30 times on Sunday. He did that. 159 yards. Like, it's just sometimes I have to remind myself that he really did that. He ran for 159 yards and a touchdown on 30 carries. And that's not sustainable, you imagine, right? At his age, or just with any running back. Like, how many running backs do you want toting the ball 30 times a game in any situation? So clearly that is not optimal. It's something that's nice to know that you can do.
Yeah.
Right?
It's in the game. It's in the barrel.
It's cool that you could dial that up if you need it. However, that's not optimal. And so the question that logically came up is, what is optimal? Not just for Joe Mixon, but for the entirety of this run game. 713-572-4610. What comes to mind for you?
He's a workhorse. So
yes.
He is a guy, and this is something we talked about when he was acquired. I think he's vastly underrated as a pass catcher. And vastly vastly underrated as a workhorse.
Right. The pass catching thing, I still think of the day at training camp where he ran that wheel, just an incredible catch. What was that? That was his first day out there.
That he actually practiced. So with those two things, so I remember last year we were talking about the whole Devin Singletary, Damian Pierce thing, and I was like, man, just give Singletary 12 to 14 carries. And that was a lot for a two-back system. I want 20.
Okay.
I really do. And that's still on the high end, but it's not 30. And I think with the way he runs, his durability, he's been a very durable back over the course of his career. Give me 20. I feel like that might be a little greedy in today's NFL, but let's remember about today's Houston Texans. Today's Houston Texans, shout out to Damian Pierce for, I think, 3 carries, 16 yards. I think he had a 9-yarder in there. Good job in spelling Joe Mixon. But I don't think we still know. I don't think we still know, Damian Pierce is the backup. I mean, there's no way they can play anyone else but him this coming week. But is he always going to be able to fill that role? So you need a workhorse. I think if Cam Akers ultimately comes in and becomes the backup running back, maybe that 20 turns into 16.
Okay.
But right now, I think, give me 20.
Interesting numbers you're working on there, because I went and looked at Joe Mixon's, his history and his average attempts per game rushing-wise over the course of his career. And it seems like for the most of the time, last couple of seasons, it's been at 15, but it's gotten up to 18, up to 19.8.
There you go.
In 2020, which was his highest usage rate when it came to rushing attempts per game. And I think that we probably need to sit towards the high end of that. 20, 20 feels like it might be a lot, but
it felt like it when I said it, but that's what I want.
For a guy, a running back at 29, where, running back, kind of that prime age of the running back, it slides a little bit further back than kind of everyone else. I think that I probably go somewhere around 18 to 20 for him. And then what's interesting is then how are you then splitting up the rest of the carries? Because I still think that you're going to have a decent amount of carries. This team seems like one that wants to be decently balanced, even though you obviously have the passing attempts or like the passing receivers to be able to throw at a high level. I think that we see people texting in like 979, who said 20 from Mixon, 10 from DP. I think
that ain't gonna happen.
I think that you get towards closer to like
four or five
from DP, and then you're adding in two or three into your wide receiving core to get them the ball, because I think we saw something that's going to be a continued usage strategy, which is get the ball to your guys in space. And one of the ways you can do that, especially for some of these guys that may not be able to get the targets in the passing game, hand the ball to them.
Yeah, and we often talk about it. That's one of Bobby Slowick's. It's in his DNA. He loves the end of rounds and the reverses. So I agree with you on that. That's how you do it. But are we, I mean, we're not anywhere close to saying, Joe Mixon is running back one and Damian Pierce is running back two. It was a good start. But I wouldn't be surprised if come week 8, week 9, Cam Akers is really the backup.
But this is the tough thing about it is we are not close to that, right?
Yeah.
And that is the royal we of those on the outside talking about this team. Them in that building, they have been there.
Yeah.
Like, they have existed there. They have not moved off of their block. Mm-hmm. And everything that all their actions have also supported that stance. And he got 3 carries, 19 yards. It was clear that Bobby Slowick knew that, hey, man, not only are we going to, when we put them out there, we're going to put them out there with the best chance to succeed running power, really.
Yeah.
Right. In a gap scheme situation which is away from kind of the outside zone stuff that they have been doing otherwise. No, it seems like they are committed to the ideas. He is our second running back and we're going to make it work as best possible. Now, I do wonder in your thought process of like halfway through the season, does it switch? I do wonder if teams are sitting on when they know that DP comes in.
It's a different look. It's a different block.
We know exactly what's coming, and maybe are we stuffing that? And does that then make him make him a little bit less effective? I think that's a question for later on in the season. As of right now, and for at least the foreseeable future, he absolutely feels like he gives the feeling of running back two, even if that's not necessarily how we on the outside
feel. Well, but let's remember this. You say they're stuck on him right now in that building. They were stuck on him as the starter last year, and that changed drastically. So even though.
But we're talking about different things. We're talking about starter as opposed to backup, especially with a workhorse that you established with Joe Mixon.
No question about it. And that might make it easier on him being the backup. But the combination of that, the combination of with Cam Akers being there, and also like they made this tough decision last year. If he does not become productive, I could easily see them making the decision again, even if it's a backup role. You know?
Yeah, I could see you there, but someone asked on the text line, and we encourage you to get involved with the conversation, 713-572-4610. How many was Arian Foster averaging in game when Kubiak broke him? Foster averaged a few times in his career, four times in his career, over 20 carries per game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was beautiful to watch. Here's the other part of this that I think is going to be really intriguing and interesting to watch. I've said since about week six last year, this is a passing team, guys. They pass to set up the run.
So are we going too far by putting 20? Like, do we need to bring that back to 18 thereabouts?
Because what I was going to say is that hasn't changed based on one game. What it's done is it's made it easier. Like sure. I still think they're going to be a passing team that has a world of confidence in to be able to back that up with the run game.
Yeah, I think, too. I think it depends on the flow of the game. So, like, I feel like the exactly. Coach games were perfect because – that's when you really needed to run the ball, and it was working.
Yeah.
And that's how they ended up putting the game away, man, just running the ball, getting the right. First down. And that's where I think the carries started adding up a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, I wish I had called this up. D'Amico Ryans on the coach's show that he did this week.
Mm-hmm.
He was asked about kind of, you know, play-calling tendencies, and I think it came up through the course of, hey, some of those decisions on, like, fourth downs and those types of things, how do you make those? And one of the things he was talking about is, hey, man, getting a feel for the game is his barometer in some ways. That's my words, not his, but just to give you a general idea of what he was talking about. And I imagine that also matters when it comes to the play calling of the game, right? Also, mm-hmm. And I mean, he's not the play caller on offense. It's going to be Bobby Slowick making those decisions, but I imagine his...
No, he said it. He said it on the same coach's show. He said, keep doing it.
Yeah, keep running that football. And so I do. Yeah, you're right. And we've heard in various different other capacities that the philosophy of this offense basically feels like pick your poison.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to try and stop the run, we will throw it on you. And if you want to try and stop the various different pass catches that we have, either there's going to be another one that pops open like whack-a-mole, or we're going to run it down your throat. And now that we've seen that they're capable of doing that, I do think that's a fair point, Fig, that you bring up, is the idea that maybe a team is going to be more suited towards trying to stop the run. Well, then here you go with the pass.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They haven't changed who they are at their best. And, oh, by the way, who they are has number 7 in the middle of it. They're not going to say, hey, let's just keep running Joe Mixon and, you know, throw in a few passes here and there. No, they haven't changed that
No,
at all.
No, but I think when the game is, exactly. when it's time to put the game away.
To salt the game away.
Yeah.
Yep.
Put it in number 28
now,
Summit.
Now, mm-hmm. let's say he's not having a good game.
Mm-hmm. The ball,
then you guys, then you got C.J. Stroud.
Well, sling it.
Yep.
Let's sling it.
Or throw a pass to Nico Collins to get that first down.
I'm looking at what you just quoted. It's pretty funny. His attempts per game the last 3 years, 18, 15, 15, 30, because he's only had one game. His attempts per game this year is 30. So, yeah, that ain't going to keep up.
Yeah, but I do. I was encouraged by week one, and again, 1 week. That's the caveat that I'll continue to make.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there's going to be a little bit more running than maybe we previously thought, because it looks like they're capable of doing that. And when that's the case, it's another weapon that you have in your tool belt. And I guess continually comparing the offense that Bobby Slowick has to that Kyle Shanahan, you know, starting point, they like running that football, even if they go and they throw it, because those things can be very complimentary. I think that you're going to see that.
Absolutely.
And so it still feels like somewhere like maybe like 18 carries, mm-hmm. something like that.
Give me 20. I'm greedy.
You're going all the way greedy. I'm saying you add another like 4 or 5 from RB2. And in this instance, I definitely think that's Damian Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
And then add a few more end around type touches for some wide receivers. And there you go. That is the diet of running that I think is probably somewhere near optimal when it comes to this team. There you go. I think we saw it that way. We figured it out. Should we coach the team?
We should.
Okay. I'm sure that'd go great.
Why don't you guys coach the turn? Since y'all know every turn.
That's right. I guarantee you that would be the
Figgy
ugliest.
Knows every listener we have, or that listener, every one of those
they
guys.
They be calling, man. Why don't you guys coach the turn since you know so much?
You ever play football?
Coming up next in the loop, Sports Radio 610. Let's talk about what's popping, including the Texans making some moves, and moves that are not just line items that we probably need to talk about. We'll do that next.
The big- biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
All right, let's get into What's Poppin' here in Loop Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and myself, Reginald Atula, hanging out with you. And when we were sitting down ahead of the show and making sure that the show was all tidy and pretty and all those things, I know you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw it on my phone. A few minutes later, Figgy walked into the room and was like, hey, y'all see this? From our friend Aaron Wilson. And I don't think we've had the rug pulled out from under us yet. Desmond King II officially signed to the practice squad.
You hear that, Figgy?
Or is he?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Still waiting on them to tweet
something. Right. We need to get the official confirmation.
Have we looked at his Twitter? I have not.
I haven't.
I haven't either, but it does look like the Texans have made this an official transaction. So it is quite literally he is on the roster, along with Troy Pride, mind you, who has been added back to the practice squad. So both of those guys, some familiar faces in the cornerback room. And you go, hey, cornerback, why did those moves get made? Well, the Texans have placed the following player on injured reserve, Jeff Okudah with the hip. And that's the thing that he was dealing with all preseason,
all the whole camp, training camp. Yeah.
And so I found that interesting as to how does that move ultimately happen? And to there's a third part of this that I'll get back to.
Mm-hmm.
But typically when it comes to that, like if he was dealing with this all camp, you would think he would either be on IR maybe that immediately. But I know that the rules state that you only have two IR spots that you can designate for return in the course of the season. And
right.
I mean, you kind of needed those with the guys that you ended up putting on IR. So typically teams, if they're going to do that and they know they're going to do that, they'll carry a player on the roster on the 53 man for a couple of days, then put them on the IR.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what happened here with Jeff Okudah. They had to have imagined that he was going to be good and useful. And then after a week, they were like, actually, this is not a thing. What do you make of that, Lopez?
I think with Desmond King, I think it's insurance at minimum. And Jeff Okudah, frankly, and maybe a large part because of the hip, he just wasn't real productive. We wondered if he was even going to make the team. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they play nickel corner now, you know, with all these guys out there and no Jeff Okudah. Who's going to be the other corner? How does that affect, you know, the number of snaps? Desmond King said, I ain't going to be a backup, you know, and all these other things. So it's going to be really interesting how they play just the rotation.
Right. And yeah, I mean, he comes in on the practice squad, but we'll see where it goes, what that means and like what kind of activations and things happen here. But Desmond King, once again, returning to your Houston Texans.
It's an annual tradition.
That's right.
Unlike any other
word to, why is the name escaping?
Jim Nantz. Yeah.
I almost said Al Michaels. I was like, that's not him. That's not the guy. It's like, and he's a Houstonian too. U of H Cougar and everything.
Yes,
my bad,
is.
Jim Nantz. Yeah. Didn't want to do that to you. Another Texans transaction that happened. And this one was a little interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Linebacker Rashad Weaver gets moved to the active roster from the practice squad. Obviously, Jeff Okudah is on the IR, so that's... I found it interesting that they ultimately moved up a linebacker from the practice squad. Do you have any level of a crystal ball view into why this might be the case?
Yes. I don't know about crystal ball, but I have a hunch on this.
All right.
I feel like with Rashad Weaver, they're a little bit worried. Maybe not worried is the right word. They're trying to bolster some of that... Because he's on the active roster, as you said.
Yes.
Like he's there. Some of that tackling that they have, some of the depth that they have.
Which is interesting because...
He's an outside guy.
Yeah.
He's had his hand in the dirt as well, so to speak. So it's going to be interesting to see, is there something happening on the edges that we don't know about? You know what I mean? Whether Jerry Hughes, Derek Barnett, or are they going to try to get fancy with him in the middle somehow?
Okay. So, yeah, you know? Those are going to be things to to look out for, maybe kind of... poke and prod to see if we can get a little bit of information in that. So yeah, those are the Texans moves that happened. Desmond King and Troy Pride signed to the practice squad. They return. Jeff Okudah goes to the IR with that hip injury that he had been nagging him. And Rashad Weaver, linebacker from Pittsburgh, moves up from the practice squad to the active roster. How about this? This is neither sports nor entertainment, but this is something that's going to be very, very important to the city of Houston. Mm-hmm. Hurricane Francine is officially a hurricane. It was previously a tropical storm, officially formed into a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico and strengthened to a Cat 1 Tuesday evening, according to the National Hurricane Center. And so the storm is expected to make landfall as a Cat 2 with winds in excess of 96 miles per hour. And the expectation is somewhere around Louisiana's southwestern coast. As you
mentioned. We got a lot of Louisiana listeners. If you have friends and family in New Iberia, Houma, Duloc, you need to give them your best. And by the way, I saw this morning. Jim Cantore arrived at New Orleans International Airport this morning. When you see, he's the Weather Channel guy. You know Jim Cantore. When you see him landing in your city's airport, go the other way.
It's not a good sign, man.
Like he's one of those guys. Like when you see him, you're like, oh no. So he's in New Orleans, or probably heading to where I just talked about Houma and such. Man. But and it's really 96 miles an hour. That'll diminish. We know things about hurricanes here, and unfortunately, that'll diminish relatively quickly. The coastal communities will get affected by the wind and the damage as they often are. But it's the rain. It has turned into a rain machine, man.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of flooding in New Orleans. Not New Orleans, Louisiana. So.
And, I mean, obviously, Southeast Texas, all this area.
Yeah.
Expect some rain, right, and storm surge. So, hopefully, everybody stays safe. I know that a couple days ago? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was at the Sam's Club getting some groceries, and they was buying up all the water. So, I hope that you are ready. You are established and good. What's coming. Astros fell to the A's and extras. One run loss. A little bit of shenanigans with some really well-placed bunts.
Three in a row. Bunt, bunt, bunt in extra innings. And the Astros defense, failed them. One of the bunts was kind of a pop-up that they couldn't get to. And then Hector Neris had a bad throw. Etc.
You want to hear him?
I would love to hear the bunt. Who doesn't love a good bunt, bunt, bunt?
Cameron squares around a bunt, lays one down. He could be safe at first. Caratini has no throw, and first and third for the A's. And he does. Lays it down. Here comes Geloff home. The throw's there, and it goes nowhere. Neris couldn't get it out. Runner keeps going. Daz at third and safe. Runners on first and third. Why not do it again? This time he pushes the bunt. It gets past the glove of Diaz, and the Oakland A's running amok. Run scores. It is 4-2. Dude. Off three straight bunts.
Jenny Kavnar, of course, that's Oakland A's television broadcast with bunt, bunt, bunt. And listen, man, I love a good bunt, bunt, bunt sequence, but that was embarrassing.
It was.
That was embarrassing.
And we were talking about it with Adam Spillane, Baseball mm-hmm. Spo, our Astros insider earlier. Like, this is going to be the thing that's going to be problematic for this team defensively. And it was highlighted as maybe in that last one specifically, Yainer not being able to get his glove on the ball like mm-hmm. this. These are the things that I mean, Hector Neris in the 12th, not able to get it on the ball or get the ball to where it needed to go. I think it slipped out of his hands as he was trying to send it home. That maybe is more of like a isolated incident, but the defense in general, mm-hmm. the way that the infield, especially the center middle infield, it was nice seeing Bregman at third, but the middle infield and first base. It's not up to snuff, especially, and I do wonder, like, is that going to be something that ultimately rears its head at the wrong time for these athletes?
Well, let me ask you guys this, and certainly our listeners, 713-572-4610, you can text in on YouTube or Twitch. You've got where to find us there. Let me ask you this, because I'm in a really weird place that I can't define with the Astros.
Okay.
Like they're in. They're gonna make the playoffs.
Still 4.5 game lead on the AL West. Magic number is 13, mind you.
Yeah.
So with wins or losses mm-hmm. from wins for the Astros, losses for the Mariners, they'll push themselves closer to fully solidifying that. In fact, I think I recall yesterday at least the guys on the drive were talking about them having the largest lead in the AL. I do need to double check that, but yeah, they're positioned pretty well.
But I'm in a weird spot. Like they're in, they're going to make the playoffs. They're the Astros. They're a playoff machine, and yet you have those defensive problems that we're talking about. You have Justin Verlander, who, as Adam Spillane said earlier, may not even, and he wouldn't even put him in the rotation on the postseason roster if he continues to pitch like this, albeit he has three more starts to maybe pull out of it. And you've got guys that are banged up. I don't know what Kyle Tucker is going to be defensively, how well he's going to move around.
Yeah,
he did look great striking out with a runner on third and only one out last night. Alex Bregman has an elbow. So I guess
Gremlins.
I guess where the question is, like, I'm in a weird spot. Where are you? because I know they're the Astros. I know they've got that gene that I often talk about. But I don't think I'm there yet where it's like, all right, here we go. Well, you like know what
the,
I mean?
The ALCS kind of feeling. Yeah, it really does feel like you're in, but like let's see what kind of switches you're able to hit, because yeah. I was reading a piece on MLB.com where the pitching has been just so good since the break. First in ERA, first in fielding independent
that's
pitching,
what I'm saying. That's what
first
I'm...
in WAR, and I'm almost to the point where yeah. I'm like, can the pitching save you from the inevitable defensive kind of lapses that are going to happen in a yeah. postseason? And or are you just going to have also your bats hit strong enough to where you put enough distance where mm-hmm. those things are not going
to
hurt you?
Yeah, I'm at a place where I just need them to get to the postseason, and then we'll talk there. Like, I'm not sure if it's a magic switch.
All this anxiety that you have right now, you're like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
But confidence level?
Yeah, I mean, my
answer is yes and no. You know, and that's why it's a weird place. Yeah. Like, yes, yeah. starting pitching, but... Oh no! I mean, you know, with this starting pitching outside of Hunter Brown and a couple of other guys, I mean, do you really? Is that a rotation that can carry you?
I feel good about the starting pitching
in the postseason.
I know that there's the experience ends up being a little bit of a question mm-hmm. in some ways, but I actually feel good about the starting pitching.
But then you have the other things, you know, as we mentioned, I just mentioned with the injuries and Verlander, et cetera. It's a weird place with the Astros this year.
Yeah, the real thing for me. Hope that your top four guys are hitting the way that they need to be hitting at the right time, because mm-hmm. if you pair that with really good pitching, I think that the defense is something that you can kind of manage in some ways. That's the way that I feel. But I'm not going to lie and say that it's not something I think about and I consider. So shout out to Ronald on the YouTube. It's like, y'all do this every year with the Astros. Teams never look perfect.
No, we don't.
And teams aren't going to look perfect, but they look bad defensively. They're one of the, I mean, one of the bottom half of the league, at least when it comes defensively, and that's not what you really
do. Yeah, no, all due respect. Thank you for listening, Ronald, but no, we don't, and we haven't. I mean, sure, we can say, what do you think about this? Can they do that? You know, is this going to be able to thrive in the postseason? But we've never, ever since 2017, thought, oh, no, I'm in a weird place with the Astros.
And especially yeah. defensively, that's been
a mainstay. Especially defensively.
That's been a mainstay for what they do well. But they'll go again this evening against the A's, Hunter Brown on the bump. And so should be fun getting to see him do that pitching thing that he does incredibly well. All right, that's what's popping here in Loop Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we enter into the 12 o'clock hour of the show, which means we're getting ready to give away a $50 gift card. That could possibly happen, so maybe you want to stick around. But also, what will definitely happen at noon, why are folks so committed to Stephon Diggs being the bad guy? We'll talk about that next.